This is Time Signatures with Jim Irvin, a podcast and radio program presented by the Capital Area Blues Society in Lansing, Michigan. Most any contemporary musical style can trace its roots back to the blues. Time Signatures explores the blues and its musical connections with captivating interviews, lively discussions, and news from the world of the blues.
You know I'm crying, crying, baby, driving up and down these Michigan roads, yeah.
And now, here he is, your host, Jim Irvin.
Baby, I'm awesome. Well, thank you, Parker, and welcome, everyone. I'm Jim Irvin, and this is Time Signatures. You know, back in the 80s, 90s, and aughts, you could hardly throw a stone around the greater Lansing area and not hit a venue that featured blues music several times a week. From the Green Door, which is, by the way, slated to go dark after June 28th, they are going out in grand fashion with a big Root Doctor reunion for their final evening. As any blues fan watching can imagine, the mood is somber in Lansing these days, for the Green Door is among the last of the venues that have catered to and supported blues music for some 40 years. But during Lansing's heyday, the blues was happening largely due to the involvement and dedication of a few big-time local promoters, if you will. The late Jim Flynn was well known for bringing huge blues performers to town, but there's another gentleman that I've heard stories about, and I'm pleased to welcome him today. Harry Oman, what an honor, man. Thank you for coming to Time Signatures. How are you?
My pleasure. Very good. Yeah.
It is such an honor to have you here. And there's so much to talk about, Harry. But I have to tell you, I'm pleased that my persistence paid off and that you finally decided to come on and talk with me. I'd like to start by asking you about your earliest memories of music.
I grew up listening to my parents' record collection, and both of them were music fanatics. And my mom in particular grew up in New York City, and she had a lot of stories about going to blues concerts. And she was a regular at a venue called Gertie's Folk City, where they had Brownie McGee, Sonny Terry.
Wow.
A lot of people, Mississippi John Hurt, and she had a lot of records too. John Lee Hooker, the record Traveling. She had a Lead Belly record that I listened to when I was a little kid. She had other stuff too, but she had wonderful stories about meeting these different people. And she and her boyfriend at the time rode their bicycles from New York City to Newport Blues Festival in 1963, and got their picture on the front page of the newspaper.
That's cool.
And which I still have. And
great little keepsake, huh?
Yeah, there's also a record from that called Blues at Newport that it's a wonderful record that I really enjoyed listening to when I was a little kid. And we listened to a lot of other stuff too, like Fats Domino, and country music, old bluegrass and stuff. She talked about Ralph and Carter Stanley and different people, Bill Monroe and stuff that she'd seen. She had hung out with Bob Dylan and knew Joan Baez.
No kidding.
Personally. And yeah, both of my mom's parents were deaf from birth. So she could play music all day long without bothering them. And so she was really a music aficionado. Her record collection, she had everything, world music, African percussion.
How cool is that?
You know, you name it.
Yeah.
But I have my first memories of the blues are like waking up in the morning and playing the record player with the volume turned down low because my parents were sleeping, and listening to like Lead Belly, Rock Island Line, and different things like that. John Lee Hooker was the big one that I really liked his voice and just the sophistication of it.
Okay.
Drew me in. And this record, Traveling, had the painting on the cover of a black guy sitting on a suitcase. And also the story, another one was Blind Lemon Jefferson. She
okay.
had one of his records too.
Yeah.
Like the stories on the back of these records were always about hitchhiking or jumping on trains and, you know, just no particular place in mind. And, you know, as a little kid, that kind of intrigued me, the idea of just traveling, you know, seeing the world, not worrying about anything like money and stuff. So,
well, Harry, was there a particular song or a band or something that you just had to keep listening to over and over when you were younger? Something that caught your attention, you just wanted to hear?
Well, I've always been somebody that had a lot of influences, and I liked a lot of different kinds of music. When I first got in, one of my neighbors played bass guitar and was really into Jaco Pastorius.
Okay.
And so we had, I had Weather Report albums. But the guy that really got me really, really into music is Jimi Hendrix. When I first heard him, it was just like nothing I'd ever heard before. I mean, it just was just totally overwhelming, really. I would have to, if I have to pick somebody that really opened my eyes to the power of music, I would think I would say Jimi Hendrix.
Now, where were you raised?
Here in Lansing.
Okay, I have to ask you.
Yeah.
Do you remember the Fifth Dimension in Ann Arbor?
Is that a bar?
It was not
really.
A club for younger people back then.
I was kind of young then when I was born. Okay.
I'm talking about
did
like
they let babies?
1967.
Yeah. Okay. I would have been a year old.
Oh. Okay. Yeah. All right. Well, the reason I'm asking is because a gentleman by the name of I shouldn't have done that. Wilson, I can't remember his last name. He took pictures of Jimi Hendrix in August of 1967 at the Fifth Dimension.
Oh. Yeah.
And I actually have a picture here, a 16 by 20 of Jimmy. I'll show you when we're done.
Okay.
I usually have it hanging up here. I don't have it up there right now. I think BB's up there behind me. But wonderful pictures. Wonderful pictures.
I know he played in Detroit. I don't know. Did Jimi Hendrix ever play in Lansing?
I don't know.
I
know he played in Flint at the IMA.
Okay.
But I know that he also played at the Fifth Dimension over there in Ann Arbor. So that's a really good question. I'm going to have to.
Listening to his music, I was really drawn to like the guitar, the wah pedal and all that.
Sure.
But there's so much blues in there that I was really familiar with. So I was able to really kind of latch on to some of his songs like Red House and, you know, just because of my experience listening to this stuff when I was young, it was very accessible to me.
And there's me and Bella making a visit. Aw. All right. So I have to ask you, Harry, when did you get involved in the blues scene here in Lansing?
Well, let me see. The first concert I went to, my sister took me to Rick's All-American Cafe.
Sure.
When it was downstairs in East Lansing. She said, I'm going to take you to a blues concert. And I was like, cool. So it was Lonnie Mack, and that was a great show. And again, the blues was something I was very familiar with. I actually, when you mentioned the Green Door, I snuck in there before I was 21.
Did you really?
Yeah, some friends of mine had said, yeah, they won't necessarily check your ID if you go with us. I can't. It seems like it took a couple tries, but somehow or other, I got in there. And I think it was the Uptown Band that was playing. And there was this guy just wailing on a Hammond organ, which I think was the first time I'd ever seen that. And so I would check around different places. And sometimes I'd even like stand out in front of the place. You could still hear the music. I wasn't old enough to get
Right,
in or
right.
didn't have the money
Yep.
for a ticket or whatever. I remember going to the Silver Dollar and stuff. And then,
Man.
Of course, a big influence on everybody in Lansing was the Capital City Blues Cruise,
Sure.
Scott Allman's show.
And that's
And
still going after all these years. Can you imagine that?
I had met him. He lived across the street from one of my high school buddies, and they had a band. I did not play guitar at
Oh,
that time,
wow.
but they would have band practices. I would see these guys roll up in front of Scott's house and unload their guitars and stuff to go in and practice. And I was like, wow, I want to be like that someday. You know, they got nice cars, girls, everything, you know. So yeah, I would listen to his radio show a lot. And one day I heard him talking about a venue here in Lansing. It was Capitol Hill Station. And I just thought I'd drop in there that night. They were having Larry Garner was there playing. And so I was watching his show, and Larry McRae was there. He and Yakety Yak, a great Lansing blues singer, were there sitting in. Larry McRae and Yakety Yak, and I really enjoyed the show. It was my first time seeing Larry McRae, and but I noticed a poster there at the club that said there was a blues jam there on Tuesdays. So I went down there and checked it out, and there was a number of different people there but nobody said anything to me like, hey, do you play guitar? Do you want to sit in with us?
And
Or
you actually do play guitar, right?
yeah, I played guitar, but not I had never been on stage or anything like that until one day a friend of ours, Jim Ritchie, who's sadly no longer with us, was there at the blues jam, and he said, hey, that guy plays guitar, and pointed at me in the audience and
He
said, come up here and play my guitar, will you?
outed
And so I did, and man, I got up there and blew these people's minds. I remember, so there was I'm being a little facetious, but there was Ray Alshire, his blues singer, was there on stage. And I went into this solo, and I saw him like snap his head around like I've never seen anybody snap their head around like this and look like, wow, what is this guy doing? You know? So, but anyway, they said, you know, come back, you know? So I started coming back, and this Capitol Hill Station.
So you were talking about Jim Flynn bringing in a variety of people to the greater Lansing area, and among those was, Anson Funderburg.
I think that was later. That was at Jambalaya's. Yeah, because I don't remember seeing Anson Funderburg. But this Capitol Hill Station was really quite a place. They had this train running around the ceiling, and the people that ran it were really quite characters, Richard and Kathy, and they had a blues jam like, so it seemed like, gosh, at least 3 nights a week, you know, and a whole bunch of us. We were there, you know, we were there looking to jam, and we got together. I got to play my first gig at this National Guard Armory. I was playing bass guitar at the time with Kathleen Walters was the singer. We had Andy Wilson on harmonica and Jim Gleason on guitar, another really good friend of mine. And I learned a lot just from that first gig, like how to follow a singer. Kathleen, in particular, was very good at directing the band. You know, she would wave her, you know, I could follow what she was doing just by listening to her voice. And later, when I started hooking up with some other people, I don't think I could have, I don't think I could have done it without that experience I got from working with Kathleen. Somebody who could direct the band, and also Jim Gleason, who he showed us how to get together and get ready for a gig and be organized and have everything on paper and stuff like that. Be organized, know what you're doing, don't be a fool, don't be a clown, you know, that kind of thing.
Well, I want to flip the page here because back in the day when the blues was flowing like the Mississippi River around the Lansing area, we had places like the aforementioned Green Door, we had Jambalaya's, we had Capitol Station and others. I want you to talk a little bit about Leroy's because, as I recall from stories that I've heard about you, this is our first chance of actually talking face to face, and it's kind of cool. You had a lot to do with bringing some really big names into town from the Detroit area, didn't you?
That was so That's skipping ahead from when I went from Lansing to Detroit.
Okay.
Actually, you know where we and the most important person in this was Eddie Kirkland,
Okay.
the wonderful blues singer and guitarist Eddie Kirkland.
Yes, sir.
I was just getting my first band together, I guess. We had a regular gig. It was like a jam session at the Rendezvous. Have you heard of that
I have heard of it, yeah.
place? Yes. And it just happened that Eddie Kirkland was coming in there and wanting a gig. There
Oh.
were going to be some other people were going to be playing with him, and I was kind of bummed out about that. But there, at the last minute, there was an argument about money having to do with some other gig involving the singer Wanda Jackson.
Oh,
And
wow.
but in the band quit basically, and they said, "Okay, you got the gig. You're backing up Eddie Kirkland." The reason we were backing him up was because we were playing there Thursday night, and he was going to be there Friday night.
I'll
So
be
that
darned.
was how that was our qualification. So anyway, but Eddie came down Thursday night, and he sat in with us a little bit, and he said, "Hey, I like the way you guys sound. We'll have a good time tomorrow," and he said, "I'll be down here early if you want to come down here and hang out a little bit," and which I did. So Friday I went down there, and he started telling me all these stories that, about like John Lee Hooker and just this unbelievable life story this guy had. And
Yeah.
he talked about the song "Must Have Done Somebody Wrong." He said, I gave it to Elmore James, and he did it, but I gave him permission. But this John Mayall stole my song, and he didn't ask permission.
Oh
But
my
he
gosh.
made a mistake, though. He put my name on it. And that's how I got over to Europe. Somebody was looking and thought, "Eddie Kirkland, I'll get a hold of him." I got a phone call, and they said, "Oh, they're going crazy about you, man. We want to get you into Europe, you know?" And, then there was another song he mentioned, "Train Done Gone," with had created like a dance craze over there or something. So he said, "Yeah, they took my songs. I didn't get a penny for it, but they put my name on it, and I ended up
You got all
going
that
to England
exposure,
and got the
yeah.
expo." Well, he'd already been around since the early days. Like he would played with John Lee Hooker on the song "In the Mood," which, according to Wikipedia, is the one of the, if not the, largest selling blues songs ever performed,
Wow.
because Hooker later did it with Bonnie Raitt, and
Okay.
they won a Grammy with the song. And but he played on the original, and some other things. But we had this gig with Eddie Kirkland. And at the end of the gig, he said, I had already told him that I had was into blues since I was a little kid. He said, "I play with a lot of bands around the country. I play with a lot of people, and you did a good job. You knew how to play my music. We'll do this again sometime. We'll do this again sometime."
Very
And
cool.
so, yeah, I was like, "Oh, good to know." And I'm getting around to Leroy's. This
No, that's fine. This is
is
great.
really
You're giving us a
important
little backstory.
part of
Yeah.
this. So when I started going to Detroit, because I had just heard about the scene that was there, and I saw some of the bands at Capitol Hill Station that were from Detroit. Johnny Bassett was the main
Oh,
one.
man.
I wanted to see him. Oh, he was just fantastic on guitar, just like every bit of B.B. King or you name it, just a wonderful musician. So I went to this jam session, and it was R.J. Spangler, who is a drummer and was like a manager for a lot of these people at the time. It was his jam session, and I told him that I had played with Eddie Kirkland, and he said, "Oh, really? That's interesting. Well, let me get your number. Maybe someday, we could do something, And I was thinking, really? I mean, I wanted to meet somebody, but I never thought I would meet RJ is like the head guy of the whole blues scene
And
down
he
there.
was at one time, he was president of the Detroit Blues Society too, wasn't he?
I think he was,
Yeah.
yeah. And he had I enjoyed going to his jam sessions. They had this group called the Motor City Rhythm and Blues Pioneers. It was three guys that were all like legendary. The one guy had some recordings on the Chess label. There was Stanley Mitchell, Kenny Martin, and Joe Weaver. They were all just fabulous people. And they would always come to the jam sessions. The other person that was always there, Sir Mac Rice, who had written Mustang Sally. And he was very cool. I mean, he would just get up and play Mustang Sally and then go back and sit down, you know. But I got to meet him and hang out with him. And there were some other just fascinating people there, people that were, you know, from a number of different bands, had recorded with like the Temptations and people like that.
What an incredible time to be down there.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, there was... And to jam with these people.
Yes.
And there was one time there was Alberta Adams' birthday party.
The original Detroit's Queen of the Blues.
Yes.
The original. Wow. Yes.
And I, my first foray into getting these people to come to Lansing, I had Alberta Adams and Thornetta Davis. We put on a show at the...
No kidding, together.
Yes. It was called the Detroit Women of the Blues.
Look at you, man.
Yeah, we put this thing together, and RJ, knowing I was a guitar player, you know, said he let me play part of the show with them. And so I got to play with Alberta for the first time. And then a little later, RJ just called me out of the blue and said, "Hey, in a couple days, we're backing up Eddie Kirkland at this blues festival in Pennsylvania."
And no kidding.
I told him I knew you, and he said, "Hire him, get him." And so...
And how old are you at this time?
I would have been maybe in my early 30s, I think.
Okay.
Yeah. Let me see how long ago that was. Sometime in my 30s, mid-30s,
okay.
Something like that.
Okay.
You know? But I had never played a blues festival, and this festival was enormous. It's like the biggest blues festival on the east side of the country.
Wow.
And the people that were there was like John Primer, Carrie Bell, all these people. And we were the headliner. And they had me out there singing, doing a couple songs to start the show out.
Really?
Then Eddie Kirkland came out, and I mean, he was doing these John Lee Hooker songs for these people that he doesn't normally do. I played with Eddie a bunch of times. He always played his own music, but I think he figured, you know, he told a story about, you know, this guy, he didn't like to pay a lot, but he was funny. And so that's why I stayed with him so long. And he played the song Boogie Chillin'. And
the
crowd just went nuts for this. And the guys that we had in the band were Mike Marshall on bass, RJ Spangler on drums, and Paul Carey on guitar. And these are just the most wonderful guys. Paul and Mike are just princes of the blues in my mind.
Okay.
Sadly, Paul is no longer with us.
Okay.
But after the show, we just had the greatest time. You know, people were like cracking champagne and asking for my autograph and stuff. And then the next day, they had this Denny's restaurant, and it was part of the hotel we were in. And so I went down there to see what was going on. And all these guys, Carrie Bell and Lurie Bell, Eddie Kirkland, John Primer. Like when I came in the door, they were all smiling like, "Hey, come over," you know, and just to be colleagues with this guy, it was like I'm still trying to process.
I was going to say that they had to be an incredibly heady time for you, because you kind of just fell into this.
Yeah.
It wasn't something you pursued.
Yeah. Well, I had pursued it for a while, but then it was a surprise.
Yeah.
I didn't know that I could do so well at that level. You know, it was quite a high level for me. It was okay, I achieved all my dreams, ready to retire now.
hanging with John Primer and the Bells. I mean, wow.
Oh, yeah. There was a bunch of other people there too. Lattimore.
Wow.
The coolest thing is we got all this thing we were all ready to go, and Eddie Kirkland was in his station wagon that is kind of a celebrity in its own right, a station wagon. There were people there wanting to pose for pictures next to Eddie's station wagon. This thing, he had taken this all over the place. He had like everything from golf clubs to potted plants in this thing, you know. So we were all ready to go, and he got I was saying, "We'll see you later." And Eddie said, "I told you we'd do it again." Because remember, he'd said before, "We'll do it again sometime." He said, "I told you we'd do it again, you know." So now we're ready to go talk about Leroy's. That's a bar in Lansing
Now,
that.
I want to interject something because I've been to Leroy's, I think, once. And it was like, I think I went there in the early 90s to do karaoke or something. And it's not a really big venue, is it?
No, it's small, and they've built onto it a couple times, so it's almost like different rooms, and the stage or the area where the band would play is sort of in the center, so it allows you to look at the band from all different sides and
Okay.
stuff. And
So who was the first blues act? I mean, you said you brought in Alberta and Thornetta.
well, originally it was Jim Flynn that told me they were booking blues and you ought to go there and see if they'll book you, which I did. And so when we played, they liked us. And it's a predominantly African American venue,
Yes, sir.
and they have like blues on the jukebox and stuff. And somehow we just got over on this crowd. Like the first time we played, it was really great. And so Leroy ended up putting me in charge of booking bands, and I told him about these different guys I knew. Harmonica Shaw, who I had met, another guy I had the fortune of playing with was Uncle Jesse White. Have you heard of him?
I have.
Piano player
Wow.
with a harmonica rig with a microphone, so he could play harmonica. I got to do the a couple shows with them at the Attic Bar in Detroit. So when I told Leroy, he was like, "You can get these guys?" And I said, "Yeah, I mean, I can try, and you know, we'll have like a regular thing there." And so the first guy we had was Harmonica Shaw. We were playing there on New Year's Eve with Harmonica Shaw, and
So you weren't just booking, you were actually part of the band. You're part of the backup band.
that's my main gig is being a guitar player.
See, I assumed, and I apologize, I assumed that you just brought people in, but you didn't. You actually were bringing them in to play with you.
But I tried to let them if they had played with me before, and I, you know, I didn't want to like force myself on them.
Sure,
I had
sure.
some of these people come. And they got to bring their own band, which was
Yeah.
kind of cool.
Wow.
We had Thornetta Davis come with her band with Brett Luke. Or
Yeah,
I
Brett
think she
would he was
actually
playing
had.
with him at
I think she had Paul Carey on guitar. That
Oh, okay.
the great keyboardist Phil Hale and Johnny Bassett.
Wow.
There was a whole number of people that we had come in and play. It was like once a month we'd have a special act. I also booked a lot of local bands too, the Delta Rhythm Kings, different people, Steve Ferrari and his girlfriend Kathy played there. They're no longer with us. Phil Snyder was another guy who played there. He's not around anymore.
Wow.
And so it was like a regular blues series. I called it the Detroit Blues Series. We had Uncle Jesse White come and honored me with his presence. He was in his late 80s, and we set him up with a piano. Another guy that I have to mention is the drummer Duke Dawson, who I met because of Uncle Jesse White. He played with Uncle Jesse, and he was an original old guy who had played with these guys in the 50s, Slim Harpo. He knew all these people. Like in the 60s, when Muddy Waters would come to Detroit, he wouldn't bring a band. He would use Duke, and then they had the Butler Twins. That was another
Yeah,
group of
wow.
guys. I didn't get to play with those, but I saw them play. But Duke Dawson was a wonderful drummer, and he would keep me on track. This guy, Uncle Jesse White, he was he still played the way he did in the 1930s, because Detroit, the blues scene was sort of sequestered away, and it didn't evolve the way other musics did. And I think he had a weekly show he did at his house, because there weren't a lot of blues bars in Detroit in the 60s, like Motown had taken over. So anyway, but I had him come with Duke, and we played. I have some recordings of those shows, and
On cassette or what?
or a CD.
Oh, we gotta talk.
But
I would love to hear those.
people that were there, the crowd, they knew like 100% what they were witnessing, and they came out like dressed nice, and they're like Sunday best
Sure.
to see these people. And we had Alberta Adams, and she was just the most wonderful singer. We had her play a couple times. There were some other guys. Let me think of who we had. Bobby Murray. And I would run sound for these guys, and also invite some of my friends along to sing, like Kathleen Walters. We had her come and sit in with Bobby Murray and played the song At Last with Etta James
Oh,
guitar
yeah.
player,
Oh, man.
Bobby Murray. And so Bobby came a couple times. There's another guy, Emmanuel Young, who
Okay.
came with Howard Glazer. You know Howard?
I do.
Yeah. Well, Emmanuel Young is
He was
he.
at Soviet's memorial that they had
Okay.
down at the Token.
Yeah, he's a good
That's how I
friend.
got to meet
He's a good
Howard.
friend of mine. Yeah. But Emmanuel Young was a really good old school guitar player who had, played with you name it, B.B. King, Muddy Waters, whoever,
Yeah.
but he could really show it, and played on slide excellently. We had him come. Billy Davis
Okay,
was
yep.
a guitar legend who has another amazing story, playing with Hank Ballard and a lot of people out of Detroit. He's got
Someone told me that didn't he help Hendrix or teach Hendrix or
He
something?
gave him like one of his first Stratocasters. It,
Yeah.
it, it's in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, and it has Billy's name on it. Let's see. I think Billy went in the military, and Jimmy took his job playing guitar with Hank Ballard. So some of these stories are I don't want to say something wrong and misstate history, but yeah, he was also friends with Jimi Hendrix's dad, because he would see them when they went through Seattle.
Wow.
Johnny Bassett gave less guitar lessons at one time to Jimi Hendrix.
Did he
He
really?
used to live in Seattle for a short time. So there's a couple people I've known that
Wow.
it's really a small world in blues, when you
It
get
really
in and
is.
find
It
out,
really
all
is.
the connections that came together. Like earlier, I mentioned my mom and that Newport Blues album. I just saw a thing on Facebook. It was Bonnie Raitt was talking about having that album, that same album, and how much she loved it and learned all the songs off of it. And I'm thinking, that's the same album I learned that got me into blues. And that she played with John Lee Hooker on the song In the Mood and won a Grammy, and I played with Eddie Kirkland. So just the connections between all these people are quite remarkable.
I had the extreme pleasure of interviewing Sean Murphy recently, and that episode has aired for those of you that haven't seen it. But she was her first time on stage was in 1969 at the Ann Arbor Blues Festival.
Oh, wow.
Everybody was there. Everybody. B.B. King, Muddy Waters, Buddy Guy, Bonnie Raitt was there. I
Yeah.
mean, I love the history.
Yeah.
Michigan, Yeah, people can say what they want about Michigan, but I love the history of music in the state of Michigan, not just Motown, not just rock, but the blues as well.
Oh yeah.
You know,
Yeah.
just absolutely
There's
incredible.
more hit, there's more of an audience for blues than a lot of people realize, because they go to the same bars, you know, the Green Door, there are three or four people. But this whole city is full of people that want to party and want to get down. And I call them my people, you know, just people, whoever, you know, they want to be entertained. And so, you know, I feel really blessed to have been able to do the things I've done. And some of the people I've worked with, back to Leroy's, some of the people that I had come, one of them worthy of mention for sure is the drummer Tino Gross. And so I met him there along with the bass player Chris Rummel, who is another guy who's played with everybody in Detroit. I would have these two guys come and back me up just as a trio. And some of the stories that Tino could talk about, like playing with Walter Horton and Eddie Taylor, and then like backing up Otis Rush, Buddy Guy, and Junior Wells. You know, I mean, he could tell some stories. There are some I'm forgetting. I mean, he was playing with like New Orleans guys, like Professor Longhair and people like that. I mean, jamming with Bob Dylan and stuff, you know. I was like, wow, this is my drummer tonight, you know. So,
Again, a very heady time for you, wasn't it?
oh yeah, it was great having booking this club and kind of deciding. It's too bad I wasn't able to keep it going, but after a while, you know, even if the Rolling Stones played every week, people would get tired of it, you know.
Well, and I think one of the cool parts of this story, Harry, is the fact that Jim Flynn, a man who is known all over the greater Lansing area for the work that he did, they called him Mr. Blues. He was the guy that kind of directed you to work with Leroy's.
Yeah, it was
Such a cool
his
story.
niece was the bartender or wait person there, so he had found out that they were booking bands, and
And of course, he was doing his thing too, to bring blues into Lansing.
yeah, we had and we played at some other places too, like the Cadillac Club. I helped Rhonda book some bands there, Magic Slim and the Teardrops. I gave, and then I pl also played there with James Harmon, who is
Did you really?
another really good player who I managed to hook up really through Harmonica Shaw. He had played in the Lansing area with some other bands. But in the early days, I think we're on MySpace, he saw a video of me playing with Harmonica Shaw. And he said, "Hey, next time I come to Lansing, I want you guys to back me up. I like what you do. You have your own style. You don't, you know, these other people, they want to play like T-Bone Walker all the time. Like T-Bone Walker was a friend of mine. Like, don't T-Bone Walker at me." I thought that was kind of funny. Yeah, don't T-Bone Walker at me. You know, I want somebody that plays their own style. And a lot of the Detroit people were like that too. Like if you, they don't want you playing Chicago blues. This is Detroit, not Chicago. It would sound strange to have like Alberta Adams and have somebody playing real traditional sounding Chicago stuff behind her. It just wouldn't sound right, you know? And I had learned from a very early age, I saw this video, it was B.B. King said, "Study the masters, but when you play, play you. Play your own sound. Have your own sound." At the time, I was thinking, like, how do you do? I mean, how would you do that? I don't know, but you just gradually over time evolve into something that people say, "Hey, I'd like to have that guy playing behind me."
I don't remember who it was I interviewed, but he mentioned that BB told him exactly that. He said,
Yeah.
"You're wonderful." He says, "But don't try to be somebody else. Be yourself.
Yeah, right. And
Develop your sound."
then maybe somebody would want to hire you. Yeah. Yeah, it was Alberta that said, when you copy someone else, you're helping them. You're not
Well,
helping
it's
you.
the sincerest form of flattery, but
But
when
you,
it comes to
yeah.
music, you have to be creative on your own level
Yeah, and
if you want to
that's
make a
one of the
name.
hardest things, I think, to do, you
Yeah.
know.
I need to turn the page here for a minute.
Okay.
Of all of the events that you put together, all of the people that you brought into the Greater Lansing area through the years, can you pick one or two that were your ultimate all-time favorites?
Well, one, yes, I can do that.
Okay.
This is at Leroy's. In the course of having various people come in, I had the idea of putting together like a tribute to Detroit blues. And so I had Billy Davis on guitar. We had harmonica Shaw. Chuck Cole is a singer that probably a lot of people don't know about. He plays guitar and bass. I'm not sure if he's still around, but he's a unbelievable singer. I mean, he sounds just like Muddy Waters.
Wow.
And so we had Duke Dawson on drums, Billy Davis, Chuck Cole, Harmonica Shaw. These were all old school Detroit blues guys,
Wow.
and me on guitar. And that was kind of a dream that I had that I was luckily able to fulfill. And we had a packed house and just really tore it up that night.
Standing there with those legends.
Yeah. We had Billy, you know, he's still around. He's
Yes.
almost 90
Yeah.
now. This is turn back the clock 20 years. Man, he could do some tricks with guitar. I mean, flipping it around, and he'd play it with his thumb over the. He did all. I mean, and the venue there, the people just love these guys. You know, it was, if there was anything I could go back to, I think it would be that. Although I've had plenty of other good times. We had a concert series there for a period of time that they stopped. Evidently, they weren't making enough money to pay all these people. And then a few years later, we started it up again and did it again for a while. And I had some personal things going on that kind of distracted me. My mom was sick at the time, and
Okay.
so anyway, I think a lot of these Detroit people kind of grew into the Lansing consciousness because of being there. Like Terry Terry, that is books the Michigan Festival,
Yep.
would come down there and see these groups like Thornetta and Bobby Murray and stuff, and then he would hire them for his festival. So it did work for them, you
How
know,
cool is that?
get exposure. But I think there was a word going around that, hey, there's this little bar in Lansing, and it's like a cool bar with cool people, and you know, you can play there and they'll love you know.
And you know, I really regret getting to the game this late in life because I've only been deep into the blues for maybe 5 years. I've got a huge collection of vinyl. I've got almost 400 pieces of vinyl, mostly blues. I got some classic rock and oldies over there. I've got almost 900 CDs that I've collected over. This is all since April 8th of last year. Okay. And I have enjoyed some of the deep dives that I've taken, because what I've found is true, is, and I've heard people say it, that when you start in the blues, you like start looking at one artist, and then you find out who inspired them, and you go to them and you see who inspired them, and eventually you go back and you're at the roots, you're at the very foundation. And that's one of the things that I've enjoyed doing with this program is digging in, getting those stories from people like yourself, and investigating a little bit of the blues in the Greater Lansing area.
Well, it's good. It's good what you're doing. I'm glad I came. My next door neighbor, you know, Deb,
Oh yeah.
as she's on the Blues Society board,
Yep, I serve
has
with
been
her.
telling me for a while, you ought to go do this, go do this. And I'm glad I did.
And I remember that day when I asked you and you said, "Well, Irv," he says to me, he says, "You ask me nice." He said, "So yeah," he said, "I'll do it." And I am so thankful that you came on. I got a couple more questions for you. Have you ever thought about writing a book about some of this stuff? I mean, seriously?
Not really. Maybe, I don't know. Have I thought about writing a book? Yeah, no, I haven't, not yet. I still have some dreams I want to make, some memories I want to make
Okay.
to fill out those last few
Yeah.
chapters, you know.
But
But
I'd love to hear, because I know that this isn't the
yeah,
only.
there's some story, there's some I missed, some of the stories about going to Detroit and hanging around with these guys. There was one guy named Kingfish, Joey Kingfish Stribling.
This is not Christone Kingfish Ingram, guys. This is the
No.
original.
Yes. He would play at the Attic Bar, and I had him come to Lansing and play at Leroy's a
It's
couple
funny because
times.
you've mentioned the Attic Bar twice now, and I did a storytellers episode last night that's going to be coming up. It'll probably air before this one, unfortunately. But they talked about the Attic Bar last night too.
Yeah,
That was a big play.
Kingfish was a regular there, but
Okay.
he was more of, he was like a producer, but and a guitar player too,
Okay.
and keyboardist. And he could write like horn parts. I mean, he could have you playing stuff you never believed you could play. Harmonica Shaw would call me up and say, "I want you to come and play this. It's a yard party, and you know there could be anybody there, like Kingfish," or there was one I missed. They had the Motown keyboardist Joe Hunter play the whole show with them.
Wow.
And he was really good friends with Kingfish. And I went and visited Kingfish at his home. Joey Kingfish Stribling. He did a lot of recording. And on the Tamla label, that was a subsidiary of Motown.
Okay.
And he said that he was the producer on over 100 sessions with James Jamerson on bass. You know, he knew these guys personally, all of
Great
them.
stories.
Barry Gordy,
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Billy Davis in particular. And you know, I wish I could get him to Lansing again. He's still playing wonderfully. He had all kinds of stories. Meeting Elvis Presley. He was with Hank Ballard and the Midnighters, and Elvis had sent like the county sheriffs to the hotel, and they got there, knock on the door, like, "Who's Hank Ballard? Is Hank Ballard here?" And everybody was like, "Oh my God, our lives are
Elvis was
over."
pranking him.
No, they said Hank Ballard finally came out and said, "Yeah, I'm Hank Ballard." And they said, "Yeah, Elvis sent us. He wants us to take you all to Graceland."
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and yeah, so they all went, and you know, and I said, "Did you play with Elvis?" He said, "No, we didn't play. We didn't play." But
Wow.
Elvis was really enamored with Hank Ballard singing, you know. But yeah, around Detroit, there's it's just the odds of running into people like the club Callahan's. Have you heard of
I
that?
have.
A lot of big name people came through here and through there, and that's how I got to play with Jeremy Spencer,
Wow, okay.
one of the original members of Fleetwood Mac.
Yes, sir.
He was coming through there. He was actually picking up a custom guitar that from Elderly Instruments, but he wanted a gig while he was here. And he looked, I guess, at like Facebook clips of the different bands that were playing. I got a call and they said, "He wants you guys to back him up. Are you guys available in a couple days?" And I said, "Yeah, sure I am." Yeah. And I called Tomas Esparza. You know
Yeah, I know
Tomas?
Tomas. I just
Yes.
saw Tomas this past weekend.
Okay, another guy
Yeah.
I've played with a lot. I called him up and said, "Yeah, this Jeremy Spencer wants us to back him up." And he said, "I can't do it this weekend. I'm helping some guys host a jam." And I said, "Tomas, I don't think you know who this guy is. Why don't you get one of your buddies to host a jam for you? And let's just do this, you know?" And he said, "Okay, he would, you know." So we got there. We basically met the guy. "Nice to meet you. One, two, three, play." You know, and it was like a whole night of standard blues. He had a couple songs that were not blues, that we learned, that were kind of like Latin jazz kind of songs that
Okay,
he had
yeah.
written. But a lot of it was like Elmore James kind of stuff. And it really went over great with the audience. There's a bunch of people there. Our drummer at the time had seen him when he first came to Detroit 40 years prior with Fleetwood Mac. And it was just neat that our drummer was there, had seen him before. But then several years later, he liked us and he came back and booked another little thing. We went to Canada and backed him up over there. He was receiving a star on their wall of fame that
Okay.
they have, the Canada South Blues Society, as another wonderful
I think
supporter.
Thornetta's got a star there too.
Yeah, I went there with Alberta too, and Harmonica Shaw
Holy cow.
and James Harmon. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Harry, we could do this all day. I have a feeling that you're
What does it
gonna
pay?
yeah.
Okay.
Listen, I get the only pay that I get in this
I
job
don't
is I
take
get the
checks. I love it.
satisfaction of being able to talk to great guys like you and women that have the stories. And I want to thank you for taking time and being my guest today on
Oh,
Times
it's my
Digital.
pleasure. Thanks for having
And
me.
I have a feeling that you're going to end up coming back for another episode.
Oh, it
I
could
think
be.
there's more to talk about.
Could be. I brought a sheet of things here just in case I wouldn't forget anything. And there are a few things I forgot to mention, so
We'll save them
we'll
for the
save
next
that for
one.
the next
We
time.
will. I think
Yeah.
that'll be great. Listen, as this episode comes to a close, I want to tell you about the VFW National Home, located just about 30 miles southwest of my current location in Eaton Rapids, Michigan. The VFW National Home assists military, veterans, and their families with children by creating a foundation of services and resources to achieve their personal family goals in order to move forward in a more positive, safe, and healthy environment. Among the many things offered through the VFW National Home are single-family homes within the community at no cost, tutoring, classes, secondary financial assistance, and educational resources to empower and grow. They also offer licensed daycare for their residents at no charge. Visit VFWNationalHome.org today, and you can learn more there. Also, you can make a tax-deductible donation, and thank you as always for your consideration. And that wraps up this edition of Time Signatures with Jim Irwin. Once again, my esteemed thanks and undying gratitude to Harry Oman for being here, but also to you, for if it wasn't for you, none of this would be possible. Jim Irwin reminding you, keeping the blues alive is everyone's responsibility, but preserving the history of the blues, one story at a time, is my mission. Until next time, so long, everybody.
This has been Time Signatures with Jim Irvin, presented by the Capital Area Blues Society in Lansing, Michigan. For more information on cabs, visit capitalareablues.org. You can find this episode and past episodes at lccconnect.org. The Time Signatures theme song, Michigan Roads, is used by permission and was written by Root Doctor, featuring Freddie Cunningham.
You know I'm crying, crying, baby, driving up and down these Michigan roads, yeah.
Until next time, keep on keeping the blues alive.
Baby, I'm home.